This podcast is brought to you by the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania.
You know, we all love high-quality items. In fact, we aspire to them in many instances. But there seem to be cases where we prefer something that maybe is a little bit bad. In fact, it can be so bad that it's actually good. That's the area of new research by our next guest and her colleagues. Patty Williams joins us. She's professor of marketing here at the Wharton School, and as we mentioned, co-author of this research. Patty, great to talk to you again. How have you been?
Hey, Dan. It's so nice to be here. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. This is very interesting. What was it that drove you to look at this in the first place?
So this is work that's actually done with two of our former doctoral students here at the Wharton School in the marketing department, who are now off on their own, fabulous professors in Arizona and in Colorado, Evan Weingarten and Amit Bhattacharjee. And Evan, in particular, is a true aficionado of what I would call things that are so bad it's good. And we had a couple of conversations. Why do people like that movie, The Room, or Plan 9 from Outer Space? How is it possible that that horrible Rebecca Black song about Friday actually became a viral hit? And when we were talking about it, we realized there really wasn't anything that had looked at why do people like things that are actually bad and why do they like them.
Are there specific areas where this seems to pop up more so than more? I mean, is it from those examples, I guess kind of entertainment may be one of the areas where we see this pop up?
Yeah, absolutely. So our paper is really focused on entertainment, though I'll tell you we've looked at a wide variety of other domains. But in the paper, we look at things from jokes. And what we find is that, you know, most people would prefer to read a really good joke or to hear a really good joke. But if we give them a set of five or six jokes and they vary in quality, a lot of people will pick the worst joke in the set over one of the mediocre jokes, for example. And from an economist perspective, that shouldn't happen, right? Our choices should reflect our preferences about quality, and we should want to choose things that are better than things that are worse. But in domains like this, whether it's jokes or American Idol auditions or So You Think You Can Dance auditions, karaoke performances, even art, we have a study that looks at bad art versus good art. Not in the paper, but we looked at things like fan fiction, Olympic ski runs, downhill ski runs, you name it, we can find it in lots of those categories that have a little bit of an entertaining quality, where I'm willing to maybe watch something that's really bad because it's really funny. It might make me laugh pretty hard.
Is there even a little bit of a generational quality to, well, I guess maybe it's a personal quality of what we think is bad that ends up being good for us, correct?
Yeah, really good. So this is one of the things, actually, it's not in the paper we published because it was really hard to study, but we tried to figure out, is there something that everybody agrees is so bad it's good? And what we've discovered is that while there's some things that a lot of people agree, you know, many people agree The Room was so bad it's good, or that Sharknado is so bad that it's good, but not everybody agrees. And so while there is heterogeneity, you and I might like different things, what we can find in the paper is that people will choose things that they themselves think are bad. And that's what's amazing to us, right, is that it's not just that I think it's bad, but you think it's good, and so I'm just mystified by your choices. It's that sometimes you might even pick things that you think are bad and sit down in front of your computer screen and watch them for a while.
Can I throw one in? Because
please do. I was going to ask you. Can you think of an example?
Well, I have found myself watching more and more online these guys that sit on a dock with a cup of coffee and they tell dad jokes.
Yeah.
And it's some of the worst jokes you'll ever see, but I think it's absolutely hilarious. And I can, as soon as I see one either on Facebook or Instagram, I literally want to stop and watch it for the, you know, 2-3 minutes that it's on there.
I love that. I think dad jokes are actually like a cultural example, right, of bad jokes. The whole thing is that you think your dad tells bad jokes, but you love them because they're your dad's bad jokes in many ways, right? They have a certain quality about them that makes them appealing. I was just talking with my MBA students last week, and the example they kept giving me was this Netflix show called Emily in Paris. They can't stop watching it, but they know it's just terrible the whole time they're watching it. I think those things are kind of amazing. And I think for most of us, we can identify at least one thing in our lives that fits in that so bad it's good kind of a domain.
Is it just in the end something that will give us, you know, there used to be the old term of stupid pleasure, Patty. And does it just give us that level of stupid pleasure that we need in our lives from time to time?
Yes. So it's definitely, I think sometimes it can be a distraction and a distraction that, you know, comes without a lot of baggage, right? You don't have to feel too guilty about it because it's just a silly little thing and it's not all that important. A couple of things that we've found about it, you know, that really make something qualify in this space is that, first of all, it has to be kind of extremely bad. You know, just kind of mediocre doesn't count. So in some of the studies, we gave people choice sets that ranged from terrible people auditioning to So You Think You Can Dance to really good people, maybe in the early stages of the audition phase, right, where there's a lot of variety in who's auditioning, versus a choice set where we're just looking at maybe the last 25 people and we're showing you the worst and the best of those examples. And what we find in that, you know, that top set, if you will, is that in that case, most people prefer the best options. There has to be some extremity to the badness for it to fit in this, you know, sort of stupid pleasure set, as you say. It actually has to be kind of stupid, right, to really qualify. And so some amount of extremity, I think, is definitely important. And then the other thing I would say is that it has to be stupid in kind of a benign way. So in our studies, what we look at is we say benign is, you know, it's an occasion where you're looking for something hedonic or fun versus you're in the mood to be educated or you're trying to educate someone else, right? So it's more likely when you're in this kind of hedonic mindset. And it can't be too costly. It can't be too long. It can't actually be offensive, right? It has to be bad, but within a realm of benign badness.
Is there even also an element that plays into this, especially in this world we live in now of social media, especially with like the entertainment content, where these things are up on social media platforms and they get played over and over and over again, and they take on that viral nature out in the public?
Yeah, so I think this is absolutely the case. We think that things that are so bad they're good are actually more likely to catch fire. We think there's a real social phenomenon, that in fact they can signal something. If I send you, you know, dad jokes from now on out, it's going to signal to you that I heard you when you say you love really bad dad jokes, right? It's a signal of how much I know you and maybe what your true interests are and maybe what our shared interests might be. And so we think there's sometimes this insider cultural knowledge that gets developed around these so bad they're good kinds of things. In the same way that, you know, really maybe high-end movies also have cultural cachet and cultural meaning that gets shared.
I'm guessing this also gives us a little better understanding of each other, which is, you know, can be beneficial, especially in our culture right now, where in many cases we are divided on a lot of things. This is a way to be able to bridge that gap a little bit.
That example. Wouldn't it be nice if we could all just come together and put our differences aside over some really bad dad jokes or some, you know, really bad movies? I'm all for that as a way to, you know, maybe find less polarization in the world.
What do you think then, by doing this research, what did you take away from it, and what kind of benefits do you think there are from understanding this this component of bad being good?
First and foremost, I'm going to say this is one of the most fun research projects I've ever done. It's just a really fun domain to study and to think about. And so it was really fun for us to work in this project together. And I love research that is not only interesting and insightful and gets published, but is really fun to work on with really fun people. Secondly, we're actually like the first paper that's demonstrated that you can get these preference reversals where people will choose things they know are going to be bad. So we really do have a contribution to the literature. The other thing about this paper is we don't have all the answers. As you've suggested, there might be a lot of reasons that people engage in this kind of so bad it's good consumption, and we're just beginning to identify some of them. So what we hope to do is maybe spark a whole area of research. Other people might also study really bad things and try to understand why people like them, when they like them, maybe how they share them. I love the idea that maybe they can bring people together and help people find shared humanity in the moment.
Patty, this has been fun talking with you. Always is. I appreciate a few moments today. All the best.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Patty Williams, a professor of marketing here at the Wharton School. To explore more content from the Wharton School, visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.